Tokyo Podcast Episode Number 3.
Hey everybody, welcome to Tokyo Podcast. On this show, I'm going to talk about leaving Thailand, the hell that is the Chinese airport, and apartment hunting in Tokyo. Welcome to Tokyo Podcast number 3. I am Anthony Joe, or as I'm known here, Ansani Joe. You know what's really interesting moving to Japan is that it is so much harder to get set up here than I ever anticipated. Even small things are quite surprising, like when I'm filling out the application forms, I have to write my name in Japanese. I don't know how to write my name in Japanese. I never even thought about that because everything in Thailand I was writing in English. So I had to go online and figure out how to write my name in Japanese. Ansani Jo. And actually, my name, the two characters in my name look very similar, that if I mix them up, it totally changes the how you say my name. So I have to really work on that. Here I am in Japan. I want to give you a quick recap of what has happened the last couple weeks. So I left Thailand and flew to China for a 10-hour layover in China. And I got to say, that was a huge culture shock. Never been to China before. And leaving the smiling, happy, friendly Thai people and arriving in the cold, unfriendly, frowning China was a big surprise. Nobody at the airport smiled, put it that way. It was about as warm as a Soviet prison. I don't know, maybe all China's like that. Maybe the communism doesn't allow them to smile, but it was just a weird experience. Nobody was smiling. Nobody was friendly. Everybody was unhelpful and rude. But anyway, so we've got 10 hours to spend in the Chinese at the Shanghai airport. And first thing I wanted to do was I wanted to find out if they had any day rooms. The Narita airport in Tokyo has these really cool tiny day rooms that you can rent by the hour. I think they're only about 500 yen an hour. And they got a little shower. They got a little bed. So it's very convenient if you have a layover in Tokyo. So at the Shanghai airport, we asked around to see if anybody had a day room, and they don't, but they have two hotels that are located in the airport, right next to the airport. So we went to the hotel, and the name of the hotel is called the Motel 168. Nope, sorry, it's called the Super. I just reminded, it's been called the Super Motel 168. What's super about it? I have no idea. But this hotel was, one night was about $75, and it was about the equivalent of staying at one of those Motel 6s that you find on the side of the highways in America. I mean, there was nothing super about this place. The carpets were disgusting, stains everywhere. All the furniture had like stains and cigarette burns in them. The bedding was disgusting. They said that they had internet, but the room didn't have internet. Then actually later on, I thought about it, and the lady told me, I asked him, do you have internet? She said, we have an internet cable. And then when I got to the room, yeah, there was a cable. So I don't know if she meant that there was just a cable and there wasn't actually internet, but, you know, it didn't work. The whole place just really stunk. It stunk like something, I don't know, out of the 70s. Like the whole hotel was really old. It felt like out of the 1970s, and the place just reeked. There wasn't much food available there. We actually ended up going to a McDonald's. One thing we did notice at the airport, though, and this is something I've talked about on Bangkok Podcast, is that there are scammers walking around the airport preying on tourists. And, you know, we've talked about it on Bangkok Podcast where that if you are approached by a Thai person and you're at a tourist destination, for example, like a temple or something like that, and if a Thai person approaches you, you should be a little bit cautious. And, you know, Greg and I joked about this all the time on our show, saying, we'd never fall for any of these scams. If anyone type people approaches us, we know exactly what they're talking about. But kind of being on the flip side, I could see how it'd be easy to fall for some of these scams, because we're walking around this airport. Nobody is friendly. Nobody is helpful at all. And then suddenly this Chinese woman walks out of nowhere and starts being really friendly to us, starts trying to offer to help us. So you kind of think, finally, a normal person. Yeah, great. And then so we asked her. We wanted to exchange some money, and she was more than happy to help us do that, but she didn't want to accept our baht, Thai baht. She only wanted to accept dollars and euro and Japanese yen. And that was a bit strange. And then I noticed that she moved us over to this counter. And I noticed behind her at the end of the hallway, I saw a currency exchange. So I asked her, I said, is there any other currency exchange in the airport? And her answer was no. So obviously right there, I knew she was scamming us. And she said, the only currency exchange, you have to leave the airport. You have to take this bus into the city. And so I, you know, I could see the currency exchange like literally 20 feet behind her. So obviously we just left her right away. And then as we're leaving, she tries to sell us more stuff like a SIM card and all these other things. So she's obviously a scam artist. But it's kind of interesting that I can understand now why people fall for them in Thailand, because when you're in a situation where you don't know what to do, no one's helpful, and suddenly this one person comes along, you feel quite grateful for any help from that person, and you're more inclined to believe that they're willing to help you. So I think that advice for China is the same as advice for any kind of tourist destination in Thailand, is that when they do approach you and they are overly friendly, just be really careful that they're not really trying to rip you off. So we checked out of our Super Motel 168 and left China and headed to Japan. And I gotta say, arriving in Japan after China was such a welcome relief. I mean, you land in a country where customer service is the best in the world. Everyone's smiling, everyone's helpful, everyone's running around trying to take care of you. I mean, it was just such a huge welcome to arrive in Japan. Breeze through customs, no problem. And we were staying at the Prince Shinagawa Hotel, or as they say in Japanese, hotelu. And I want to talk about this hotel briefly because I just love this hotel. I stay in it every single time I come to Japan. And I'm sure there's other hotels that are just as great, but I really like this hotel. And I think it's a really good hotel for first-time visitors to Japan. And let me tell you why. One of the first thing is, it's really easy to get to from the airport. From the airport, there is a limousine shuttle bus that takes you directly from the airport directly to the hotel. Now, there is a train system called the Narita Express that does also take you from the airport to the hotel. However, that can be a little bit more difficult if you have luggage and if you've never taken the Japanese train system before. It's quite a bit shorter. I think it's about half an hour instead of the 1 hour bus ride. But for me, I always just take the bus because it's really easy. When you exit Narita Airport, you'll see these, I believe they're orange and black signs. I'll put a picture up on my website. And they're directly in front of the exit doors there. So you just walk up to them, tell them you're going to the Prince Shinagawa Hotel, and the charge is 3,000 yen. And they'll give you a little ticket with a gate number where the bus comes. And it's so cool. The bus comes right bang on time. So you go outside, you wait outside at your gate number, and the bus comes exactly on time. And then they'll give you a little ticket for your luggage, and you get a nice about a one-hour ride into Prince Shinagawa Hotel. And like I said, it goes directly to the hotel, so you don't have to worry about changing trains or getting lost or anything like that. Another reason why I like this hotel is that it is directly across from Shinagawa Station. And Shinagawa Station is one of the main stations on what's called the Yamanote Line. And the Yamanote Line is this big circle that does a big loop around Tokyo. And most of the tourist attractions that you will want to visit can be accessed from the Yamanote Line. So it's really convenient that you don't have to change any trains. This Shinagawa Station is directly across from the hotel and makes it very easy for getting around the city. If you do take the Yamanote Line, what I would recommend is, when you go to the ticket machine, this is a little bit confusing because it's all in Japanese, but there is an English button there. But push the English button, push the button for discount tickets, and buy something called the Tokunai Pass. Now, this is a one-day pass that allows you to take all the trains within Tokyo. Why in heaven's name is not called the one-day pass or the all-day pass or here's the Farang Gaijin pass? I have no idea, but it's called the Tokunai pass. I even asked my Japanese friends, what does Tokunai mean? Does it mean one day or something? And they said they didn't even know what it meant. So I have no idea why it's called that, but it is. But this card is about 700 yen, and it allows you to take all the trains within Tokyo area. Maybe it's just JR, I'm not 100% sure, but anywhere you really want to go for sightseeing within Tokyo, it'll allow you to take this. And it's actually a pretty good deal because If you take the trains around Tokyo separately, each time you take the train, you have to pay for the distance that you've traveled. And it can add up actually quite a bit. So I really like this Tokunai Pass if you're doing a lot of sightseeing and moving around the city. The hotel is composed of four towers. And what's really great about this hotel is that it's a huge, huge facility, actually. It's really large. But the prices, in my opinion, aren't that high. I mean, many people are always surprised that I stay at the Prince Shinagawa Hotel because it can be an expensive hotel. But the four towers all have different pricing. So I think what's called the East Tower is the least expensive one. And I've found deals online at that hotel for less than $100 per night. And I've also stayed in the other rooms in the Annex Tower where it's been $200 to $300 a night. So the price can vary quite a bit. I've noticed that Expedia usually has some pretty good deals booked with an airline for this hotel. Just be careful your airline doesn't take you to China like mine did. But this hotel is great. I mean, it's a full-service hotel. They've got a really, really, a bunch of really nice restaurants in the hotel. They've got a bowling alley. Yeah, a bowling alley in the hotel. They've got a movie theater. They've got, like, this aquarium where they do the dolphin show and stuff like that. So they got, like, everything. Internet cafe. They've even got a post office in this hotel. So for us, like, if you want to move, send some stuff home, you can send it to this post office. Or what we did, we used it to move our luggage from a hotel to our apartment. So, I mean, this hotel is just fantastic. And around the Shinagawa area, there's also a lot in that area. There's a lot of restaurants. In the Shinagawa station, there's a department store, and both Japanese, you can find like cheap Japanese noodle places as well as more expensive foreign restaurants. I think there's an Outback Steakhouse and a TGI Fridays that are just around the corner. So I really like this hotel because it's extremely convenient to get to. The hotel is packed with facilities, and it doesn't matter which tower you stay in. You can stay in the least expensive one and have full use of the entire tower and all the facilities in the whole hotel. So it's really a great option. And there's just a ton of shopping and restaurants and everything all around there. And it's quite well known. So if you happen to get lost, you can tell a taxi driver, Shinagawa Hotel, Prince Hotelu, and they'll know where to go. So my recommendation, if you're coming to Tokyo for the first time, and because there's thousands of hotels here, I would definitely recommend checking out the Shinagawa Prince Hotelu. Well, unfortunately, we weren't here on holiday, and soon reality kicked in, and we had to find an apartment. And finding an apartment in Tokyo is really difficult. It's difficult if you do it the way we did it, I guess. One thing I've noticed with the Japanese is that they really seem to rely upon the company or the school or some kind of organization to take care of them and do things for them. I noticed that with many of the Japanese who moved to Bangkok is that their experience moving and living in Bangkok was a lot easier than many of my Farang friends. I'm sure every Farang who's listening to this who lived in Bangkok has dealt with the visa issue, finds that an extremely frustrating situation. I know my buddy Greg, who co-hosted the Bangkok podcast with, who's been there for 10 years, have got a rock solid work permit visa. I remember one time when he had to go renew it, he had to spend 6 hours at the visa office. And so anyone who's listening to this in Bangkok, you know what a pain in the ass it is to deal with the visa. And yet for the Japanese, it's not at all. All they do is hand their passport to the company Thai guy who heads out to the immigration office and does everything for them. Some of them, they don't even have to leave the country. They're technically supposed to leave the country, but they throw a couple extra thousand baht within their passport or whatever they do, and they don't have to leave. So it's a really easy situation for them dealing with the visa. So I kind of found the same thing here is that if you're coming here with a work contract or a company setting you up or a school setting you up, it's really easy because you show up at the airport and everything's all taken care of for you. If you're coming here kind of on your own like I did, things are a lot more complicated. One of the first things that surprised me when I moved here was how many fees and how much paperwork is required to get an apartment. And some of these fees are not common in the West. So it can actually be quite expensive in the first month that you move in. One of the most infamous ones that, you know, many foreigners hate to deal with is called the key money. I believe it's called Aiken. It's called key money. And some people would describe it as a bribe. Some people describe it as a gift. But it's basically 1 or 2 months rent that you give to the landlord for free. You don't get it back. It's just, here's your money. And I don't know what the history on that is, but you just give it to them. On top of that, you have to usually pay 1 or 2 months of deposit. Now, this is very common around the world. I had to do this in Thailand as well. And the theory being that when you move out, if your apartment is just as clean as when you moved in, you get that deposit back. On top of that, you have to pay what's called a key changing fee. Now, every time a new tenant moves in, the landlord changes the locks on the doors. Now, that's great. Good idea in theory. However, I noticed that the key changing fee was 15,000 yen, which is over $150. Now, you know, I'm kind of rolling my eyes a bit because I know I can go to Home Depot and buy a lock for 20 bucks. So I don't know where the $150 comes in. That wasn't as bad, actually, as the cleaning fee. I noticed that when you move out, you have to pay a cleaning fee. You can't do it yourself because you're not obviously not certified. You have to have a certified cleaner come in and pay this cleaning fee. And I noticed that the cleaning fee ranged from about around $150 to over $500. This one property we looked at, it was $500 for the cleaning fee. And I mean, are you kidding me? 500 bucks to clean a one-bedroom apartment? It cost me 300 baht to clean mine in Bangkok. That's $10. But that's another fee that you got to pay. So you got your key money, you got your 2 months of deposit, you got your lock changing fee, 150 bucks, you got your cleaning fee, $500. You got a couple years worth of insurance. You have to buy property insurance for 2 years. And then what you have to do is if you use a Japanese agency, what's interesting is you pay the agency fees here, not the landlord, which is quite different compared to Thailand because in Thailand, many of the fees are paid for by the landlord. For example, I did a video with Amazing Properties run by my good buddy Gerwin, and all of his properties that he has listed, his fee gets paid for by the landlord because obviously the landlord wants him to find them tenants. So it doesn't cost you anything. And in some ways, it actually gets cheaper because Gerwin can negotiate better than usually you can. But here in Japan, it's totally opposite. You have to pay the agency their fee for finding you the property, and which is usually either half a month's rent or 1 month's rent. So, and then on top of that, you have to pay first month's rent. So it's not uncommon to have to pay 4 to 5 months worth of rent initially when you move in. So if you're renting a place for, say, like $800, you could easily be paying over $4,000 to move into your empty apartment in the very first month. And that's a lot. I didn't anticipate it would be that much. And on top of that, you got all this paperwork to deal with. Now, keep in mind, this is all dealing with just Japanese rental companies. I'm going to talk about the ones that cater to the foreigners in a sec here, but these are the ones that cater mostly to the Japanese. So with the Japanese, you need like your income statement, bank statement. You need lots of copies of your passport. That's not uncommon. But what I was surprised is that many of them required that I have two local contacts here in Japan. And they obviously wanted my contact information in Canada and contact information in Thailand as well, which I thought was strange. I mean, I haven't lived in Canada in 4 years, so. But they wanted local contacts here in Japan, and it's rather difficult to do when you've been in this country all of 5 days and you don't really know anybody. So I had to kind of scramble around and ask some friends of friends of friends, you know, hey, do you know anyone in Japan that I could use? And the other thing that really kind of was a difficulty was that the real estate company wanted me to have a phone number, a local phone number. And they were really quite surprised that I didn't have a local phone number. But the problem is that you can't just buy a phone card here or a phone number here. Everything is done on a contract. And I didn't want to sign a 2-year contract until I had an apartment. And so there are some very limited prepaid options. But the irony is, to get this prepaid card, you have to have a home address. And you have to have some kind of utility bill to prove that you live in Japan. Well, you can't get the home address until you have a local number. But you can't get a local number until you have a home address. And apparently that catch-22 is not strange for the Japanese. I tried to explain it to them, but I just got the blank stare like, what are you talking about, you crazy foreigner? That makes total sense. No, it doesn't. But anyway, so to get an apartment with a Japanese real estate company does require a lot of hoops to jump through and a lot more paperwork. I will say, though, that the Japanese companies, the apartments that they showed us were nicer and larger and cheaper than the ones that the real estate companies that catered to foreigners showed us. So if you can get through all their paperwork and deal with all that, you probably will get a bit of a nicer place. And I mean, it was really fun actually going through the properties with the Japanese real estate agents. So different than in Thailand. I remember one property that I looked at in Thailand, the guy just literally like took me upstairs, unlocked the door, and then went back downstairs and just sat there and watched TV while I walked around the room kind of by myself. But in Japan, this guy was so funny. Every single property that we went and looked at, he would run ahead, open the door, and lay slippers down in front of the door for us to put on before we walked into the room. Every single one, he would do that. So we would look at the room and we say, great, thanks, we want to see the next one. He would gather up all the slippers, take us in his car to the next property, run ahead, put the slippers back down. It was so cute. So the properties that he showed us were really, really nice. I really liked some of these Japanese style where they got this like newer apartment. Everything looks new, but inside they have what's called the tatami room. And tatami is that kind of straw floor. So there's like one room which kind of has this old retro, old style Japanese look to it, while as everything else around it is new. So I really liked the properties that he showed us. The only drawback was that they were a little bit far out, a little bit further out than what we would have liked. So the second company that we talked to was called Tokyo Rent. And this is a company that's run by two expat ladies, and they cater mostly to foreigners. And their process, I gotta say, was a whole lot easier. I will say that within our budget, their Tokyo Rent properties were a lot smaller, a little bit older, but definitely closer to the location that we wanted. So our choice was, do we live in a nicer, larger place? The rent was about the same on both of them. So we said, you know, do we live in a larger place that's further out or a smaller place that's closer? But in the end, we went with Tokyo Rent with a smaller place for a number of reasons. One was the location, because we tried taking the train in the morning and the train is just packed. And I mean, yeah, that may be fun for the first 1 or 2 days, but having to do that every day. I mean, I lived in Tonglo in Bangkok and I didn't even take the train to Siam. I thought it was too far. So I have to take a half an hour train ride in a packed Japanese train was not my idea of fun. So we ended up going with Tokyo Rent, a little bit closer. It was only one station away from our where we want to be. And we're actually really glad we went with Tokyo Rent, because even with all the paperwork aside, there's a lot of rules and regulations when you're living in your house. Even something as simple as taking out the garbage. There's certain weeks or certain days of the week on which day you can take out certain types of garbage. So on some days you can take out plastic, and then other days you can take out paper. And if you miss that day, you have to wait the whole next week. And what's even stupider is that you can only take these things out at 8 o'clock in the morning. So if it specifically says, do not leave these out the night before. So you have to wake up on a Saturday before 8, take your damn garbage out, and go back to sleep. I don't know who thought of that. But one thing I'm good talking about is they really clarified all these rules and regulations for us to make things a lot easier. They got our internet hooked up. And so I'm really happy that in the end we chose Tokyo Rent. Our place is a little bit smaller than what we would have liked. Just to be able to avoid all the hassles and paperwork and fees. The good thing with Tokyo Rent is they don't charge the massive amount of fees that the other Japanese real estate companies charge. And the thing to think about is with these fees, this is money you don't get back. This is just free money you're giving them. And so it can add up to be quite a bit. So And Tokyo Rent doesn't charge us. They charge us what? Just a month's deposit, and that's it. So we save guarantor fee. We save the key money fee. We save the changing of the lock fee. We save the real estate agency fee. So it's really ended up being a really good deal. The ladies there were really helpful. And in the end, we got a nice little cozy apartment that's only one stop away from our work and school. So there you go. That was our first week and a little bit about finding an apartment. Next week, I'm going to talk about our experience in getting furniture because most of these apartments in Japan are rented unfurnished. And finding furniture, getting that delivered, once again, had me missing Thailand. You know, I was actually pretty excited about leaving Thailand, but I got to say, in this first week here, I am missing Thailand more so than the Thai person in this room. It's just so much easier. You don't realize how easy things are in Thailand until you move to a country like Japan. But we got an empty apartment, so we're gonna start to furnish it, and school and work and all that kind of stuff starts next week. So holiday time is over, back to the reality. But I gotta say, it's been a very interesting experience so far, comparing what it's like to get set up in Japan versus what it's like to get set up in Bangkok. That's it, Tokyo Podcast, episode number 3. I am Tony Joe, and thanks for listening, everyone. Bye-bye.